Boom! We are back. We are back and louder than ever in stereo once again. So, hey, how's everybody doing? It's Thursday, February 1st. It's good to have everybody here. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. If you are watching on Instagram Live, if you are listening to the recorded version, thank you. And if you are listening to the recorded version, you will notice that it should, once again, be in stereo. So that was my victory of 2018 so far, is being able to resolve the issue with my computer that was preventing me from recording this in stereo. So I will not bore anybody with the gory details, but involved futile attempts to get anything accomplished via tech support, furious Google searching, reinstalling of drivers, and Microsoft updates, and then uninstalling and repairing them. And anyway, it's done now, so it's good to have that done. I'm really excited about the episode this week. We got a lot of stuff lined up. There are some new recurring segments I'm going to try, so we'll try those out. I'm going to intersperse those throughout rather than front-loading them, just because, you know, I like to keep you guys guessing a little bit, keep people listening. So I want to start, though, with just a generic kind of week in review, as I have been before. So as I mentioned, the big news for me for this week was the microphone issue is fixed. So I cannot tell you. I actually yelped out a little bit and did a dance of joy at my computer yesterday once I got that resolved. So it's a big deal for me. Thank you for humoring me on that. It's been a good week in the gym. I hit some new maxes on a couple of lifts, which was great. So, you know, don't laugh, everybody. But I benched 275 for a solid 10 reps, which I'd never done before. That's flat bench. Just because, yeah, I've never been a big bencher. I'm not a particularly strong dude to begin with. So 275 for me, it felt like a ton. And same thing with my deadlift. I pulled 405 for a double. If you look on my Instagram, which is at Darren_Star, you can see that video up there. It's still one of the top few videos posted. It's good for a laugh. It's good for a laugh because there's really, like, you know, it's like a 45-second video for two reps because it takes a little while to get up to get that first one going. So if I rewatch it, it's good for a little chuckle. Anyway, if you've been following along closely, you would know that I did a little. I think it was starting about this time 2 weeks ago, I did a little bit of a ketogenic reset on the diet. So that is over. That lasted about 6 days. I dropped about 6 pounds, and now we're back into the carb swing of things, which is nice because I have officially fallen in love with my air fryer. And so you notice, if you've been following me again on Instagram, I keep posting pictures and, you know, keep posting my story as well about my my successes with the air fryer and potatoes. It is totally worth it. It is so awesome. I can't even tell you. For the first time ever, my wife tried to steal some food that I had made that was actually meal plan friendly. That has never happened before, but she's a fan as well. So anyway, that's my endorsement. Get an air fryer. It is worth it. I have been keeping exceptionally busy. So, you know, in case you don't know, I'm a prep coach and I do it full time for a living. That's all I do. Well, pretty much all I do. I do have a side gig. If I had to rely on my side gig to live, though, I would be under a bridge somewhere. So my side gig is as a musician. It is very much just a, you know, we do it for fun. I spend more money on it than I make, and it's not even close. Not even close. So, but we have two bands. It's basically the same band, just with a different lineup. We have a 5-piece band, which is me, two singers, a bass player, and a drummer. And then we have a version of that band that is without the bass player and the drummer. So it's just me and the singers. So we have a gig lined up in February. It's about 3 weeks away. And it's two nights. So back-to-back nights, we're playing for this private event for a local women's club. So we're going to be playing for about 500 people, which is a pretty big crowd for us. We were a little concerned if our PA was big enough to pull it off, but I think we can do it. Main moral of the story here is I've got like 6 hours worth of music that I have to be prepared for because we're playing 2 hours the first night. With the trio, and then the trio is playing 2 hours again the second night, and then the 5-piece band is playing 2 hours the second night as well. So got a lot of stuff to work on. So that has been keeping me very, very busy, learning new stuff, practicing stuff. So I'll be doing a little bit of that today. I may post some of that as well, just because, you know, why not? Also, I had a funny note from a client today, which I thought this was great. So You know, it's always interesting when you get a perspective on health from people who, you know, are not in the bodybuilding world. And I know you've all heard this kind of stuff before, like, you know, you're following a meal plan and somebody's always going to chime in and say, you know, is that really healthy? I'm like, come on. Come on, really? I mean, as you're over there eating, you know, the standard American diet, which is responsible for more health issues than anything else, you're going to criticize me because I'm eating chicken three times a day? Really? We're going to go there? We're going to have that discussion? Okay, fine. Anyway, I got a note from a client, and he went in, you know, he got his went in to the doctor and got blood work done, et cetera, and just checking things. And so his HDLs were a little on the low side and his LDLs were a little elevated. So that's your cholesterol, you know, the HDL being the good stuff. You want that high. His was just a little low. And his LDLs, which are bad, you want those low. They were just a little high. You look at the ranges and, you know, they give you ranges for what's acceptable, and he was just barely outside of the ranges, so it's not really a huge deal. But, you know, nonetheless, I mean, I always defer to doctors just because, you know, if I tell somebody something and I encourage them to do something that contradicts their doctor's advice, I have a massive liability issue. So I would say this is my opinion, but do what your doctor says, parenthetically, no matter how dumb it may be. Because doctors, honestly, it's not a part of their education much about nutrition at all. So the advice that this guy got, who is following a meal plan, you know, he's done both. This is Brian. Brian, if you're listening to this, hey. So he's followed a meal plan. He's followed a macro-based plan. Right now, he's doing a little bit of both. So he's following a meal plan, except on some days, he'll shake it up and do macros to match the same values that are in the meal plan that I'd written for him. So, you know, it's all very modest. Like, his protein isn't out of control. He's got some carbs. He's got some fats. They're not super low. They're not super high. They're kind of middle of the road. It's fairly moderate all around. And he's doing, you know, cardio, I think about five times a week. You know, nothing crazy there. You know, we're trying to cut down a little bit of weight. Nothing too dramatic or extreme or anything like that. The note that he got back from his lab results, though, it said, and I wrote this down quoted, said, quote, "Your LDL, the cholesterol, is mildly elevated. I would like you to follow a low-fat, low-cholesterol diet with regular exercise." So my response to that is 1982 called, and they want their dietary philosophies back. So a low-fat diet does what precisely? I don't know. A low-cholesterol diet does what precisely? It's been clearly debunked many times over in many studies that dietary cholesterol and blood cholesterol do not have a direct correlation. But I have had in the past a client who was a cardiac nurse who didn't want to eat eggs because of the cholesterol in them. And I've had this conversation with many people. Occasionally, you will find somebody, a doctor, who recognizes that and is up on the research. Apparently, they are still teaching this in medical school. I don't know. But it's just so outdated, and it's just asinine. And then with regular exercise. So clearly, this is like, you know, the doctor version of the cut and paste response that you get from tech support when you call up and can't get your cable modem working. So it's just, it's lazy, it's stupid, it's factually incorrect, it is actually opposed by current research in their field. So I don't know. I lose my shit a little bit sometimes. But nonetheless, what can I do here? I'm not a doctor, so I'm saying, yep, okay, low-fat, low-cholesterol diet with regular exercise. Well, let's get right on that regular exercise part of it, because we certainly aren't doing that already. I mean, it's just so generic. It makes my soul cry a little bit. Anyway, okay, we have we're going to get to our first new recurring segment. Now, I love to have like a little audio cue here that I would plug into the podcast, the recorded version afterwards, to signify, you know, some kind of sound effect, a musical interlude or something, but I don't have that. So I'm just going to put on my radio guy voice here for a second and introduce this segment. So excuse me, let's do this. It is Gym Pet Peeves. So a couple of my gym pet peeves. I got two for you here. One of them is a little bit more serious, and one of them is just a facepalm moment. So in a squat rack, you've got a bar in there, you've got it set at a certain height so you can get under it and then go to town and do your thing. This is not so much a pet peeve as a safety concern. Do not put those things at the cradles where the bar rests when you're not using it. Do not put those things at a height where you have to get up on your tiptoes to get the bar out. Because if you do, keep in mind, if you're squatting appropriately, you're probably going to finish that set a little bit shorter than you started it. I'm just saying, you can do a calf raise at the start of your set when you're fresh. You probably aren't going to do that at the end of the set after you've just wasted yourself. And if you are, and if you're able to do that, I would question if really your set was really worth all that much. So this is on my mind because there was a dude in the gym a couple weeks ago, and I had to rescue him because he couldn't lift the bar back up, you know, on his tiptoes, like he was too fatigued. And he's standing there, he's got 225 on his back, and you know. I got to out myself a little bit. I watched him struggle with it for about 10 seconds before I went over to help him, just because I'm like, can he get it? Can he get it? And then I had that moment where you're like, should I just let him figure this out the hard way? And eventually I'm like, no, I got it. So I went over there and I helped him and I lifted the bar and helped him get it back on there. And then we had a laugh about it. But so don't do that. You should have to go into a tiny little squat, you know, dip down a little bit to get the bar on your back and then stand up. And then it should be off the cradles at that point once you stand up. So, you know, you don't need to get down into a full squat and then get the bar there. But, you know, don't set them too high. That's the big thing. The other thing is collars. So the collars, these are the things that clamp on the end of the barbell that hold the plates in place. A couple things on these. So first of all, if you put collars on the Smith machine or on some kind of plate-loaded machine, you're asking to get punched in the face. And I've seen them hanging around, like they're on the floor next to the Smith machine, and I'm looking around like, who put this here? Like, do I need to go have a talk with somebody? This is not cool. This is not acceptable. This is not how you use these things. And I would also challenge you, you know, I used to be a fan of them, and now I don't use them for anything. I don't use them for a squat. I don't use them for a bench. My thing is, you know, their purpose is to keep the plates on the bar. Like, if your form is so bad that you need collars to hold your plates in place, you probably shouldn't be doing the exercise to begin with. Like, if your squats are so uneven that the plates are starting to fall off one side of the bar in the middle of your set, you should probably dial back the weight and fix your form. And that would actually be a good litmus test. Dean on Instagram, I saw someone put clips on a leg press once. and you know, most clips, you know, oftentimes, like they fit well on a barbell, but usually on a plate loaded machine, like they don't really fit on there and provide any kind of tension or friction whatsoever. So they're actually like doubly worthless just because the diameter where you stick the thing where you stick the plates on a machine, because they want the plates to be able to pull smoothly off and be pushed smoothly in place. They're usually just a little fraction smaller than a typical barbell. So the clips aren't going to even clamp down on something like that. So anyway, it's just, I think collars are way overrated, but certainly on a machine where the movement path is predetermined and you can't really deviate from that. So anyway, stop it. Now, I've got three main topics that I want to discuss this week. So we're going to jump into the first one right now. And this is, if you saw my preview on Instagram, we're talking about things that end in MS. So first thing is DOMS. So delayed onset muscle soreness. This was suggested by David, a client of mine, and it's something that we've you know, chased back and forth, and there's a constant conversation like, you know, how important is this? Is it something that signifies a quality workout? You know, if you're not sore, did it really count? That kind of thing. So let's debunk this. Let's just get to the meat and potatoes and what everybody wants to hear right off the bat. I'm going to call it soreness just because I really hate pronouncing acronyms if I can help it. Like DOMS, I think, is just stupid to say. It rolls off my tongue. It's one of those words that I just don't like saying. There's a whole list of them, but I'm not going to give you that list because then people will just say them to me all the time and I don't want to hear them. And also I don't want to say them myself. So anyway, so muscle soreness is it essential? Like, do you have to have soreness to count the workout from the previous day as something that was effective? Absolutely not. You don't. You can certainly build muscle and have effective workouts without muscle soreness. to a degree, especially when you are relatively new. Now, the first time you go to the gym, you could just drive past the gym, look at all the stuff inside of it, and not even stop and get out, and probably be sore the next day. There's a very low barrier that you have to break in order to achieve soreness when you're first starting out. Just looking at weights, just picking them up, throwing them around a little bit, you're going to be sore. Ever think of, you know, if you've been forced to take a couple weeks off from the gym, that first time you go back, and you're like, I'm going to just lift it about 50% of what I used to, and then the next day you feel dead completely. So it's that same kind of thing. You know, the more fresh you are, the less you're going to have to really exert yourself in order to achieve soreness. Now, as you progress and as you get more and more into the category of what I would call an advanced lifter, then yeah, I mean, your technique is going to have to be on point. And if you want to build, if you've already put on, you know, over the course of your life, let's say, you know, let's be ambitious here, 30, 40, 50, 60 pounds of muscle, something like that. In order to put on another 1, 2, 3, 5 pounds, you're going to have to be pushing a lot harder than you did for those first 1 to 5 pounds. Absolutely. So your technique is going to have to be improved. Your intensity is going to have to be improved. And at that point, I would say, you know, if you're not sore at that point, you're probably not growing. So the answer, of course, everybody wants an easy answer. And this is another question where we just don't really get an easy answer. It's always, it depends, which is why I always roll my eyes whenever I give that answer, because it's not what people want to hear, but yet it's always true. It always depends on your level of experience at this point. If you're newer, then yeah, you know, you can fail to achieve soreness and still have a quality workout. If you've been at it for several years though, and you're close to, you know, what I would call your genetic potential, you better be pushing hard enough to feel that, or else you're probably not working hard enough to actually, you know, build new tissue. So now soreness is typically, and research kind of bears out, that it is actually primarily caused by the eccentric phase. So if you're like, man, I just never get sore anymore. Okay, well, just do a workout where every exercise is 5 second negatives and you'll fix that shit in a hurry right away. So that's kind of like cheating, but the emphasis is there. Like, there should be a quality negative involved. Not necessarily on every exercise. I don't want to throw out universal blanket statements like that, but it's important to really feel and really work the eccentric portion of an exercise. It is. I mean, universally. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to do it, like I said, on every exercise, every day you go into the gym, but you should make it a point. I know one thing that Ben Pakulski has said before is talking about range of motion. You know, there should be one exercise for every muscle group that you hit in every workout where you experience a full and deliberate stretch. So if we're talking like biceps, something like, you know, a spider curl or a preacher curl where you get full elbow extension and that bicep is fully stretched to its maximum, some exercise like that in each workout. And then you can play around with different range of motions. You can play around with partial range of motion. You can play around with avoiding that maximal stretch on other exercises. Same thing with the eccentric. I think there should be some exercise in every workout where you're really emphasizing that. Like, I did chest today and, you know, I did barbell press. I did some cable work. I did a pec deck and I did a machine press. And on that machine press, and I'll probably post a video of this later today, I was aiming for a really explosive concentric and then somewhere like a 3 to 4 second negative on each rep. So I think it's important to try and continue to emphasize that on a regular basis. That is where that soreness comes from. It's the primary factor, primary contributing factor to soreness is the eccentric phase. So there's a little bit of bro science thrown in here as well, which I always like to address whenever possible and try and find out what the real truth is. So the bro science approach to, you know, how do we mitigate this soreness? And, you know, a lot of people will on Instagram, PWall921 says proper rep cadence, 2 second negative, pause, 2 seconds concentric, too slow. I always challenge people on that and say, you know, I challenge you to perform a rep too slow. Because I don't think it can be done. You know, I've seen reps in extreme cases where there are 10-second negatives involved. Now, clearly, you know, the longer a rep takes, like what you threw in there, like if it's a 2 second negative pause, let's put a duration on that, like 1 second and then a 2 second concentric. So that's a 5 second rep, assuming that we're ignoring the squeeze phase there. That's a 5 second rep. So if you do a set of 10, that's suddenly a 50 second set. That's a long time. So clearly the weight's going to be a little bit lower, but I don't think that's too slow, and you have to evaluate everything in its own terms. So, you know, if we're talking about a bench press here, for example, so 2 second negative, 1 1 second pause down at the bottom, 2 second concentric, and then no break in between reps. And you're doing that for 10 versus if you're doing a powerlifting style bench press for 10 reps, which is a high range for that style. Clearly the weight's going to be different. So that's something that has to be taken into consideration for sure. But, too slow? No, I certainly don't think so. I plug in reps like that frequently. Tempo schemes like that frequently, where we're talking about 4 second negatives with maybe ones around elsewhere, that kind of stuff. So I have no issues with any tempos that slow at all. So a lot of people ask, how do I mitigate soreness? And I think, you know, the masochist in a lot of us wants to know how we can lessen the effects of soreness so that we can avoid doing that, so we feel it more, because then it feels like it was a more productive workout. So whatever your reason for wanting to know how to lessen the soreness that you feel, the bro science approach is, well, just stretch after your workouts. It's been clinically proven, so that the eggheads out there have proven that doesn't really work. I buy into that, but I also think we should accept that the truth lies somewhere in the middle. Not so much that it can help it, but I will tell people that it does because I want them to stretch. Because stretching is important. Take it from a guy who doesn't do enough of it. Stretching is important. And so if somebody wants to minimize their soreness and they're asking me, will stretching help with that? I'm going to lie and say yes, because I want them to stretch. So I'm kind of okay with a little white lie here and there. What you can do, however, I mean, here's the thing. So going back to, you know, beginners can feel it, very easily without really doing anything extreme. It depends, says Dean. Yes, good answer. How beginners feel it more, the key is to warm up properly and progress gradually. So a good warm up, so that things are, you know, you're not just blasting them right out of the gate. I mean, certainly that's going to put you at a higher injury risk, but it's also going to make things sore and not necessarily in a good and productive way, but also progress gradually. So if you're first time in the gym, even if you're just a naturally, you know, beastly strong individual in your first workout, don't go and bench 315. Just work up to it. You know, I mean, not only do we not want you to kill yourself, but also, and this applies to a lot of people, especially if you've taken a break for a week, 2 weeks or something like that. If you're a little bit more of an advanced lifter, you come back, don't come back at your one rep maxes. You know, work into it and progress upwards gradually to where you left off. Now, let's say you've mitigated as best you can, but you're just too much of a beast. You just cannot be contained. You've busted the lock off the cage and you have destroyed your body. You've got this epic soreness. How do we deal with it? So, Dave on Instagram says 7 sets of 10 lat raises to finish your shoulders is masochistic. You're welcome for that. Yes, sir. So how do we treat muscle soreness? So there's a few things that we can do. This is like the 5-step program here. So step one is fluids. Push fluids in your body, water specifically. Overhydrate yourself. That is going to help tremendously. Movement. So especially this is really easy to... when you're dealing with soreness in your legs, it's really easy to kind of get the point across. So, you know, if your quads are hurting, it really, you know, you're going to feel it when you walk downstairs. If your glutes or hamstrings are hurting, it's really going to hurt when you walk upstairs. So it's, you know, it's either the resistance of the knee extension or hip extension. So whatever hurts, just do more of that, which sounds crazy, but the more you put that muscle through the range of motion where it feels restrictive, like, you know, if your chest is really sore and you bring your arms back like this and that's when you feel it, you know, stretch it out and don't necessarily hold like deep static stretches, but just dynamic stretches. So, you know, pull your elbows back like this, get that stretch in your pecs and feel it. Just get the muscle moving and working again. The worst thing that you could do is, you know, if your legs are sore, is just sit all day. Stand up, work them around. You know, you don't have to do like massively huge hip swings or anything ridiculous like that, but just get the muscle moving and working a little bit. A little light stretching can certainly help. So the last two things that we can do is a little iffy, but time, just wait it out, bide your time basically. And then the final step is acceptance. just deal with it basically. Accept the fact that this comes with the territory, and while you can do things to help mitigate it, you just have to kind of deal with it and suck it up. So that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. I did work with a client once, and you know, this is back when I was still training people in person. So he came into the studio, and you know, he was probably, you know, 50 pounds overweight, just classic like lazy guy, didn't really want to do anything. And he's like, you know, I really want, I want to lose this weight, but I don't want a workout that's going to make me feel sore. And so I knew immediately, I'm like, this guy ain't going to last. I was still in that phase where I wasn't just willing at that point to say, well, bye, you know, get out of here, because it ain't working. So I told him, like, okay, well, you know, we'll see what we can do. So I put him through a couple workouts, and it was like, you know, really, if I said it was half-assing it, that would be generous. It was like quarter-assing it. He was like, oh, that's good. And is he getting any kind of result? No, not at all. And so one day I just kick his ass completely, and I don't think I ever saw him again after that. That was pretty much the end of it. So, there you go. That's DOMS in a nutshell, muscle soreness. It's time for another new recurring segment. This one's a little off topic. I'm going to ask y'all to humor me. The topic is, once again, my special effects budget is spent for the year, so I'm going to do this manually in my radio guy voice. So, music of the week. Yes, that's right. Music of the week. Why? Because, as I mentioned, I'm a musician as well, and this podcast is about what I want it to be. So it's primarily bodybuilding stuff, but we're going to mix it up a little bit and throw some music in here. So I'm not going to play you any music. Don't worry. I will spare you all of that. What I want to highlight in this segment is just stuff that I've been listening to, not necessarily new stuff, but, everybody's musical taste kind of, it speaks a little bit to about who they are. So, the one, and I'm primarily also going to focus on albums here, not like entire artists or just specific songs, but I do still like to listen to things in album format. I know that is kind of going out of style with iTunes and Spotify and other streaming services, but I still do believe in the album format, and I know a lot of musicians out there do as well. So the album that I would like to highlight this week, and I'll keep this relatively brief, is Drones by Muse. Muse is one of my favorite bands. They are a trio. Seether, best band ever, says PWall921 on Instagram. I don't know about that. I dig me some Seether every now and then, but best band ever, I don't know. Seether is one of those bands where I feel like, you know, I can't play a guitar for beans, basically, but I feel like I could play guitar for Seether. That being said, I dig the dude's voice, and they have some cool songs. So I'll give you that. I'll give you that. So Muse, I dig a lot. They're a trio. They're out of the UK. They're fronted by Matt Bellamy, who is a classically trained pianist, a really good guitarist, and one hell of a singer as well. They go back to 90s. They put out plenty of radio singles. You recognize a lot of their songs if you're not familiar with the band. But they were putting out some albums, and then the one that they put out before Drones, it was The Second Law, which I thought was a great album. It had a couple of weak spots on it, but overall, really solid effort. It just got to the point, though, where they're like, man, this is starting to sound really overproduced. And so they put out Drones, and it was really like a return to the rock roots of the band. I mean, it's all riff-driven stuff. It's not overly crazy as far as, you know, being overly pretentious or overly progressive or anything like that. It's certainly, they're making a statement, like they're making some strong political statements through their music, but it's just really well done. I really enjoy it. It's a great, the first half of the album, pretty much the entire thing is really excellent for working out also. It's like high energy stuff. It's kind of mean. It's got a little attitude to it. So if you haven't listened to it, I would recommend it. If you aren't familiar with Muse, I think it'd be a great introduction to the band as well. So it is their latest full release. They've got a single that they put out recently that I also like as well. But anyway, that's your music of the week. So the next full topic that we will cover here is one that was requested. I believe it was requested by Scott, if I'm remembering that correctly. He said, you know, can we talk about SARMs? So I'm like, yes. Now, I don't know if this is going to be the discussion that he was looking for necessarily, because we haven't really talked about it before. So I want to do kind of an introductory overview to it to give people a little bit of a lay of the land as far as, you know, what the hell are these things? Why might you want to use them? What are the pros and cons, etc.? So a SARM, we're talking compounds now. So we are firmly in drug category at this point. So SARM is a selective androgen receptor modulator. SARM is one acronym that I don't really mind pronouncing, just because it's a lot better than saying that mouthful. So So a SARM, this is a performance-enhancing drug, to be clear. So the first question that comes to a lot of people's mind was, well, how does this compare to a steroid, or specifically an AAS, an anabolic androgenic steroid? And you'll notice that one of those words is the same. Both of these are compounds that have something to do with the androgenic side of things. So androgenic is not necessarily good. So in AAS, anabolic androgenic steroids, the first A, anabolic, we like. The second A, androgenic, is not what we like. So that's what typically leads to negative side effects. So the SARM specifically, it's more targeted so that it is avoiding those androgenic side effects. So basically, you're getting many of the benefits of something like testosterone without any of those androgenic side effects. So that is the real benefit of a SARM. These are things also that have legitimate clinical uses for conditions like osteoporosis, although typically you're going to be using those at a lower dosage there than you would for bodybuilding purposes. One thing that's really important, I wrote some notes here, and they're in a bad order, so I'm going to shake things up around here. Much like with steroids, SARMs are one of those things where if your training and your diet are not really like on point and really cruising along, you're not really going to get much of a benefit from this. Like if you're like, hey, I'm working out. Yeah, I'm going to take something. No. I mean, you should be beyond the point where you talk about, hey, I'm going to the gym. You know, no. I mean, you are training. You're training for something. You're into that, you're following some kind of a plan. You have a plan of attack, a long-term and a short-term plan. You've got a diet in place. You're able to follow it. You're able to hit your lifts with a level of intensity and aggression that is actually going to make your body change. So get into a groove with that. And that may take some time. For some people, that is a multi-year process to learn how to get there. Other people, they can come up to speed much more quickly. But SARMs, just like AAS, if that stuff isn't in gear, you're not really going to get much out of it. Now, the difference there is with AAS, if you abuse them and, you know, use too many compounds, use doses that are too high, you're going to waste a lot of money and you're going to potentially end up with some side effects that you don't want. With SARMs, really, you're just going to end up wasting some money. The side effects are very, very minimal to non-existent, and that is not... that is not spin, that is legit. It's because the nature of the product is such that, you know, they are basically side effect free. So you're like, wow, this sounds too good to be true. Well, it kind of is, just because the anabolic effects of a product like a SARM, and there are several of them we'll talk about here, they're just not as strong as a legitimate steroid. So it's kind of like, you know, steroid light, I guess you could say. So there's a certain selection of the population that I think they're great for. So let's talk about the benefits here. The first one, and this is the biggest one for a lot of people, is that SARMs are legal. So that should not be discounted. So a lot of people will never touch a steroid because it is not legal. And they're like, it is a controlled substance. You know, if you get caught by some, you know, over aggressive cop who finds your stash or whatever, and they can throw the book at you and you're going to be screwed. Or they're going to, you know, they're going to turn you to find somebody higher up the food chain. But either way, there's a legality that is not present with SARMs. There are no legal issues with this. You can buy them online. It's fine. Now, how long that will remain the case remains to be seen. You know, our government is great at throwing all kinds of restrictions on things that don't really need restrictions. Why is testosterone a controlled substance? Beats the hell out of me. I have no idea. And again, this applies to America. Laws elsewhere, I do not know. So the other thing is because there are fewer side effects, they are great for women. Because otherwise for women, you know, you're limited to a handful of, if you want to be largely side effect free for women and be taking some kind of performance enhancer, you're limited to a very, very narrow selection of products. The most common of which is Anavar. And the issue there is that is a compound that is faked more than just about anything else, just because it's expensive. And so black market suppliers will have a very easy time putting a different product in there that is much cheaper and passing it off because, you know, you get a lot of the same effects, but the potential side effects with some of those other products like Dianabol, Anadrol that they might put in place of Anavar, much, much more severe for women specifically, which is why as a woman, you would never take one of those products, but you may take it inadvertently if you're trying to take Anavar, but you got it from a less than reputable source. So, those are all things where, you know, you just don't necessarily, until you get a source that you trust, which you're kind of rolling the dice and kind of seeing what happens there, until you know that, you just, and you've had some experience with a specific product, you just don't know what you're dealing with. With SARMs, you still don't necessarily know because there are some more and some less reputable sources for SARMs as well. But the chance of side effects, I mean, if anything, what you're going to notice with a SARM is that it's underdosed. Like they will be sold at a specific concentration and in practicality, it may be a little bit underdosed, like a little lower concentration. So you're just getting less of the compound than you think you are, which is, you know, shady business, but it doesn't really have any negative impact on you, except your gains will be lower. So, that's one of the big downsides is just product reliability can be very sketchy from some of these places. Like if you go to SARMS1.com, which is one of the largest online stores for purchasing SARMs, their stuff is fairly reputable. There are also, if you do a search and you're thinking about, you know, what I would search for is like, you know, SARM online store quality or something like that. And you can find some Reddit discussions from people who have had experience working with companies, and some of them are active on some of these Reddit sub forums as well, where there was one, and I can't remember the name of it, but if you perform that Google search, you'll probably find the discussion I was talking about. And the company said, hey, you know what, if you have something and, you know, you don't think it's what it's supposed to be, like you think it's underdosed, get it sent off to a lab, we'll pay for it, or send it back to us and we'll test it and share the results with you. Now that's something where I'm like, I kind of like that. I kind of like a company who's willing to go to that level to stand behind their product. I think that's a good thing. So consider also that when you go, you know, if you search for a product at SARMS1.com and it's available at a certain price and you go somewhere else and you can find it at half the price, that should raise some eyebrows. Because those compounds, they cost a certain amount. And, you know, SARMS1, I think you're paying a premium just because they do have more of a reputation for higher quality. I don't want this to turn into commercial for them. To be clear, I've never ordered anything from them. So I can't speak to it, but that's the reputation that they have at least. So the other downside, aside from them being, you know, potentially the concentration being a little you know, sketchy, or, you know, product reliability being a little uncertain in some cases, is that as I mentioned before, they're just less effective than a legit anabolic androgenic steroid. So which is not to say that it's worthless, but you know, it's like, you know, if AAS is the 10-pound sledgehammer, SARMs might be more like a 3 or a 5-pound sledgehammer. So you're still using a sledgehammer, so you're still going to break something. Just might take a little bit more effort, so it might take a little bit more time with a SARM to get where you're going. And I don't think the ceiling would necessarily be as high either. How are they available? So usually, I mean, all SARMs are oral, which is another big bonus, because if you wanted to do a steroid and you're a guy, the only real option is you've got to inject something. And for a lot of people, that's just like, whoo, that is off the table at this point. I cannot do that. So SARMs are all oral. So they're just solutions. So you get a little eyedropper and you just gulp, swallow it down. That's all there is to it. Now, SARMs 1, I noticed yesterday when I looked, they have... they're in the process, I think, now of moving from solutions to capsules for everything. So it's still oral, but it's not a liquid solution. It's actually a pill that you swallow. So, and also at SARMS 1, I think probably at other places as well, you can order powder so that you can make your own solutions or cap your own pills if you want to as well. So that is another option. You can save some money that way. It's a lot of extra work. You're basically going to have to set up a little bit of a makeshift chemistry lab to do it correctly. But, you know, if you intend to use a lot of this stuff, first of all, I don't know that you really need that much, but that is another option at least. So One other thing is that's worth talking about is, you know, where does this fit in the landscape of competitive bodybuilding and natural shows? Like, can I take a SARM and do a natural show? So, first of all, the answer is it depends, which is not the answer that I was expecting to find, actually, when I did some research for this. So, the two organizations, the NANBF and the OCB, they are governed by the same rule set. If you look at their banned substances list, and this is something that you should do if you ever plan on competing in at a natural show, is look up the organization and find their banned substance list, and then just make sure you are 100% in compliance. And if you are not, do not do that show. I know I've talked about this before, but I think it's super important. Do not be a piece of garbage that wants to compete in a natural show when you are not natural. Don't do it. So if you look up NANBF or OCB and their banned substance list, SARMs are on there, but usually, you know, for most of them, it's just like a bullet point list, like, you know, testosterone, equipoise, winstrol, blah, 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 blah. For SARMs, they actually have cut and pasted the first paragraph of the Wikipedia page from SARMs into their entry there. I don't know why they did that, but I think it's just to try and say, you know, a SARM, which is anything that does this. So, yeah, I mean, that is definitely on the banned substance list. Now, another organization, the NGA, which is the Natural Gym Association, I think they put on shows all over the country. SARMs are not mentioned in their banned substance list. However, I do feel like if I emailed somebody at the NGA and said, hey, what about SARMs? It would probably find its way onto that list. I believe it is omitted accidentally. And I checked, and the latest revision that is posted of their rule set, which contains the banned substance guideline, is from February of 2017. So, they should be on that list and realistically, but at the same time, you know, the way it's written right now, it's not against the rules, but, I feel like if that was brought to their attention, it would probably be against the rules before too long. So, at any rate, what are some of the more common SARMs? So there are four that I want to talk about here. All of these, I mean, the thing is you can run a stack of SARMs as well. Like you can run one, two, three of these products at the same time for various lengths. This is just, I wanted to mention a few of these just so that you can go and conduct your own research. The first one is S4. It's also known as anadrine. You can use this for growth, strength increase, fat loss. This is commonly seen as one of the more effective ones. Like if anybody was going to ask, what's one SARM that I should be taking? S4 would probably be at the top of the list for most people. So another one is, let's see if we can spit this out. GW501516, or if you wanted to, call it by its less formal name, carterine. It is primarily a fat loss agent. So this would kind of be like the SARM equivalent of something like clenbuterol. It's not going to do much for strength. It's not going to do much for endurance. It's not going to do much for growth or hypertrophy or size. But for fat loss, yeah, it definitely has some benefits there. LGD 4033, that's for growth and fat loss both. And then you've also got MK02866, otherwise known as Osterine, which is primarily a growth agent. So the cool thing is, you know, we don't have to have, when it comes to SARMs, we don't have to have a separate discussion for men and for women. You know, it's the same list of things applies. The only thing that's going to change is the dosage. And so if you do, you know, a Google search for dosage on things, you'll find a lot of discussions online. Like if you search for, you know, S4 dosing for women, you know, some of the first 10 pages of some of the first 10 results that come up are going to be discussion forums where you can say, oh, well, I did this, or my wife did this and had this experience, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody will say, that dose is too low. And then somebody else will say, what are you talking about? I did double that. So, you know, just be prepared for those kind of conversations. And when in doubt, ask somebody qualified. The discussions like that can get you started down the right path, but then you should also always check with somebody who actually knows something. So, and then I just wanted to touch one more time, just very briefly. All of this stuff, even though SARMs are legal, so that's great. We like that. It's not going to get you too much if your diet and your training are not on point. So don't waste your money. Get your act together. Get your plan together first. And then if you want to, you can throw in something like this. We got a couple more topics here. So one other recurring segment that I wanted to throw in here. This one's just kind of for fun. It's a little off topic. Once again, I will bust out my radio guy voice since my special effects budget is gone. So random news of the week. So I saw this article. I actually heard about it on the radio, and then I went and researched it. And it was not new, but it was new to me. So I saw this from today.com, and I think it was also mentioned in the Wall Street Journal. There's this interior decorating trend that is taking your bookshelves and turning all the books around so that the spines are facing the back of the bookshelf, and the only thing that you can see are the pages and then like the edges of the cover as well. And I heard that, and I'm like, immediately, the first thing that popped in my head is, that sounds every bit as dumb as a sleeveless hoodie. Like, that completely defeats the purpose. And yeah, just so you know, if I ever see anybody in the gym wearing a sleeveless hoodie, I'm totally judging you, and I'm thinking you're just basically too stupid to live at that point. So if anybody out there is listening and commonly wears sleeveless hoodies to the gym, first of all, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you, but at the same time, come on. Really? Sleeveless hoodie, give me a break. The books facing the wrong way on the bookshelf, it's like, at that point, you're acknowledging like, hey, I've got these books. I probably never read them, and I'm never going to touch them ever again. I'm just making a decorating statement here. It seems kind of ridiculous. It defeats the purpose of having them. And I was like, God, this just sounds so stupid. And then I was looking at some pictures of them, like, actually, that does look kind of cool. Unlike a sleeveless hoodie, which absolutely does not look cool in any way, in any weather. It just does not add up. So don't. Please stop. But the books actually look kind of cool. I mean, you were basically acknowledging, and anybody who comes over and has ever read a book is totally going to judge you when they see your bookshelf and everything's turned around the wrong way. So just be mindful of that. So at any rate, I just thought that was a curiosity worth mentioning here. This is going to be the longest podcast to date at this point. So the other main topic that I wanted to discuss here, this is going to be a relatively brief one, and this just came about from a question from somebody, is 1RMs, one rep max numbers. So in my assessment form that I have new clients fill out, one of the things that's on there is, hey, give me your, and I actually don't explicitly call for a one rep max, but most people interpret that as such. Give me your max lifts for bench, deadlift, and squat. And what I actually say is, you know, blank weight for blank reps. So if somebody says, oh, well, I typically do 185 for 10, great. I don't need a one rep max, but that just tells me kind of what range you're in. So how practical are one rep maxes for bodybuilding? Well, the answer is not at all. They really aren't. So why do I ask for them? I get a lot of insight, and I really like to read a lot between the lines, you know, with stuff on assessment forms and with stuff that I get from clients in their weekly check-ins. I'm always kind of reading between the lines on things and really trying to look closely and see what isn't being said or what is being said, but not explicitly. So if somebody says, don't know, that tells me a lot. Like, I don't know how much I usually lift. Okay, well, that tells me that you don't track anything. Because if you can't tell me how much you can bench for 10 reps, like even like just roughly ballpark within the nearest 50 pounds, that tells me a lot. Maybe you don't do that exercise. Or conversely, I can see, like, I get this a lot from guys. Oh, I can bench 315. I deadlift 455. Squat is just blank. I'm like, okay, gotcha. Loud and clear, buddy. I hear ya. Or also, if the numbers are way out of line, like I bench 315, I deadlift 315, and I squat 185. Really? Okay, I know where we're going to be, what we're going to be focusing on. You need to work on your legs. I can tell that right now, even without looking at your pics. So that's why I asked. So now I do train strength athletes as well. So if somebody's training for powerlifting, I do powerlifting programming as well. So in that case, it's clearly much more applicable because most strength-based programs are going to rely on your one rep max. Not that you're going to be doing it all the time, but you're going to be lifting a certain percentage of it. And then at some point you'll go and retest, and hopefully that number is going to come in a little bit higher. And then all of the percentages under that will change and then scale upwards. And then you can repeat the same program or you can go to a different program. So, and I have spreadsheets set up for all that stuff if I've got a client who's doing that. So it's exceptionally useful for that. But for bodybuilding, not so much. Not so much. I mean, it's kind of fun to test things. And as I mentioned last week when talking about rep ranges, it can be really useful to play around with things on the lower scale of rep ranges. So something in the 3 to 5 range. You know, it's not going to be your bread and butter for bodybuilding, but it is going to encourage different recruitment of muscle fibers, which is good. And as we mentioned last week, you know, you want to use everything. You know, you want to use your slow twitch, you want to use your fast twitch as well. So doing some work in that lower rep range is going to be helpful. It doesn't need to be the focus of your plan by any stretch of the imagination, but there should be a little bit thrown in here and there. So I have no problem with that at all. But with bodybuilding, you know, we're not doing things that are based off of a percentage of a one rep max. So knowing what that number is doesn't matter. What matters is, what did you do last week? And then can we progress from that this week? So just keeping logs of things is much more important. So, for powerlifting, absolutely essential. For bodybuilding, there's at best a minimal practical use for those numbers. So I just wanted to touch on that very quickly. So, I have the last recurring segment is what we're going to close with here. And this is, I always wanted to leave people with some closing thoughts for the week and a little, you know, word of wisdom. And sometimes these will be insightful. Sometimes they may be humorous. Sometimes they may just kind of help you get your head right. So as you close up, as we close up the episode this week, I just wanted to throw out a piece of advice to everybody, which is tell people with your actions. Don't tell people what you intend to do by telling them with words, but show them. I understand that this is very common in bodybuilding. I have been guilty of this myself many times, and I'm saying this all to you out there, every bit as much as I'm saying it to me right now as well. Nobody cares about hearing what you want to do. What they care about is, you know, seeing you actually follow through with it. And if you want to inspire people, which, you know, I don't necessarily know that that should be anybody's main focus, but it's a nice side effect of what we do sometimes, is other people will kind of catch on and see what we're doing. But you do it with your actions. You don't talk about, you don't do it by telling people what you're going to do. So a corollary to that would be to some extent, do it quietly. You don't have to make a huge deal of what you're doing. And especially if you can do what you're doing, you have ambitious goals and you're putting in the work towards hitting them, and you're doing it kind of, you know, hat pulled down, blinders on, focusing on you, not to the exclusion of everything else, but not also saying, hey, look at me, blah, 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 check me out, see how awesome I am. Just go about your business quietly, put in the work on a day-to-day basis consistently. I think that is a much more powerful statement. So, and certainly everybody's welcome to have a different opinion on that. But the main point that I wanted to leave everybody with here is tell people with what you do, not with what you say. So that is going to wrap it up for this week. So I really appreciate everybody listening in here. Thank you very much. If you've got questions, comments, we are going to be doing some interview segments soon. I've got a couple lined up. I don't know how long they will take to actually come to fruition. Now that I have my recording issues resolved, that was one barrier that I had to get fixed first. So if you have suggestions on people that you would like to hear on this podcast, or if you think you would be a good guest, if you think you've got a good story to tell, let me know. I will get the booking department on it immediately. So once again, the best way to contact me is if you go to 5starphysique.com, click on contact. There's a form right there. You could also just email me directly. It's Darren@5starfitness.com. You can also find me on Instagram @Darren_Star. You can send me a direct message there through Facebook. It's facebook.com/5starphysique. You can also find me on Pinterest, 5starphysique, YouTube, 5starphysique, and Twitter @DarrenStar. No underscore. I really need to work on my continuity for my social media handles here. So anyway, also, if you just go to the website, 5starphysique.com, you'll see links for all that stuff up there. So once again, thanks everybody for listening. I do appreciate it. I hope everybody has a great week. And remember, tell people with your actions.